Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we spend the next 90 minutes or so talking with you about safe holiday and vacation shopping, doing things that will keep you safe and your credit card safe, and hopefully you won't lose money that you didn't want to lose or you didn't want to spend. Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen, who is Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guest today. They're back again, and we decided, we had so many calls last time, it's just the 45 minutes, we decided to go with 90 minutes today with them. And certainly, if you have questions or comments as we move along today, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo or you can post a question right there. Michelle, Ryan, great to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Yeah, and Sandy Chalmers, thank you so much for coming back as well. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Larry.
We have National Cyber Security Awareness Month in the month of October. What is cybersecurity exactly? And Sandy, maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah. You know, we're living online these days. And wherever people and money are, criminals are sure to follow very quickly. And I looked at some of the FBI statistics on cybercrime. I found it very interesting to see that 10% of the complaints the FBI received from Wisconsin involved losses of over $10,000.
Whoa!
So that is significant. ID theft is the top type of cybercrime reported from Wisconsin, and also credit card fraud is another major one. People, I think, for the most part, understand the basics about how important it is to have anti-spyware and antivirus software loaded on their computers. It's important also to look for that kind of software that uploads automatically, updates automatically, mm-hmm. especially if you have a broadband connection that's hooked up all the time. Firewalls are very, very important as well, especially, again, when you have a broadband connection. And the thing that people need to remember is if you have a computer hooked up to the internet unprotected, it's just like leaving your front door wide open.
Yeah.
You need to beware of that and make sure you're protecting yourself appropriately.
And are there types of websites that are riskier or less secure than others? You know, how do you tell if a site is really safe?
Well, what we're seeing a lot is the spam that includes a link for you to click on, or a pop-up window that, you know, shows up when you're surfing the web. Avoid clicking on those pop-ups. Never click on a link that's sent to you in an email, because that usually includes some kind of malicious software that will track your internet surfing, download your keystrokes, which could include your online banking information, credit card numbers, passwords, and things like that. Also, avoid downloading free software, games. My kids really enjoyed downloading these free games and toolbars. Make sure your kids understand that they should never do that, because they usually contain some kind of malicious software.
Yeah, so those are all good things to think about. By the way, you can join in with your own questions or comments as we move along here at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And also our Facebook at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there. And we do have one from Elaine from Facebook. What can be done about the constant calls I'm getting from automated Rachel, who says they can help get lower interest rates on my credit card? I've connected to the live person and asked them to not call, but the calls continue. So, Sandy, back to you for that.
And those calls will continue, because those calls are a scam. And what we call her Robo Rachel. What she wants is your credit card number. And this is most likely a scam that originates overseas. Many of these telemarketing scams are organized crime rings, you know, very sophisticated. They tend to focus on a region or area code and just start calling through. And I know it's really, really frustrating for people who are on the no-call list and continue to hear from Robo Rachel. But of course, these are criminals and don't care whether you're on the no-call list or not.
Yeah.
It's very helpful to us when those calls are reported. It helps us identify trends and get the word out to people to beware. We just heard from an elderly lady yesterday who had no idea this was a scam call. And I'm hoping she didn't, you know, give up her credit card information.
Yeah. Well, we have Scott and Eau Claire with a question, so let's go to Scott. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you, Larry. My one comment is when you said not to open any emails containing links, that's a bit erroneous because, unfortunately, like working in the professional world, being a journalist, like all the time I send links back and forth in emails to news stories, to other websites, etc. So I think telling people across the board not to open a link in an email is a bit off-putting.
Okay. Well, how do you respond to that? Michelle, let me go to you for that.
Scott, you're right. I mean, to make it a broad blanket statement, I mean, you want to make sure you're opening links from a reliable source. If you question if someone has sent you a link, pick up the phone and ask them. Because recently I received emails on my personal email account from a friend with these links in it, but their email had been hacked. And so those links weren't good links, even though it looked like they were from a reliable source. So you send the email back, you generate your own email. Did you mean to send me this? What does this contain? What does it link to? So you just need to be cautious about those links. If it's through work systems, a lot of work systems have higher quality filters on them, and they might be more reliable. But you're going to want to question what's being sent to you and question those links.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's very fair. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, one of the most recent scams involves Facebooks, where people's Facebook accounts are hacked into, and spam goes out to Facebook friends saying, "Hi, I'm Sandy. Have you seen this yet?" And you click on that link, and your computer is infected. So you have to be careful about Facebook as well.
Thanks again, Scott, for calling. I want to turn to Annie in La Crosse. Hi, Annie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I think you just answered my question, but a comment that I have is I got an email yesterday. It said I won $1 million. And all they wanted was all my information so that they could send me my $1 million.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you for not falling for that one.
Well, you know, yeah. Me too. Thank you very much.
Well, everybody wants to be a winner, you know, and some people are vulnerable to that kind of a pitch.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it looks so nice, and you can sit and daydream about it a little bit, and then, well, should I? No, you shouldn't. No, you shouldn't. John in Columbus, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering if your guest could speak on the product, the LifeLock product, if they know of its effectiveness. And I'll take their comments off the air.
Yeah, LifeLock. Michelle, do you know anything about it?
You know, I can't speak to a specific company. You know, we could check our computer system if you call our 800 number to see if we've received complaints, and that's 1-800-422-7128. But what I can tell you about these companies in general is they're companies that try, if I'm thinking of the right one, that are like an insurance that help you if you become the victim of identity theft, or they try and prevent that you will become a victim of identity theft by doing things that you can do for free yourself. So it's a service that's being provided. But one thing you want to look at really close is how is it that you would ever be able to receive monies from them? What kind of losses do you have to show? Do you have to show who was really responsible for the loss? And in data breach situations, that's very difficult to do, show that your identity theft was actually a result of this breach and that it wasn't something else. And how much time do you have to put in before you would ever get a payout from this insurance company? So you really need to understand all the details and fine print in whatever insurance or policy agreement that you have regarding identity theft. Mm.
It's also a good idea to make sure you understand the cancellation policies and any fees that you would be responsible for paying if you change your mind about the service.
There you go. Thank you, John. Katie in Burlington, on to you. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I received a letter in the mail just a couple days ago, and it said it had kind of specific information. It had our name. It had when we took out our mortgage. It said how much our mortgage value had been back then. And it said that we might be entitled to a refund because the mortgage company might have miscalculated our payment. And I just, well, first of all, you know, you think of all the things you want to buy and how you could sure use that whatever extra money that's going to come your way. But I just think it just seemed almost too good to be true, and I trust our mortgage company. So I'm just wondering, does that sound like a scam?
I recently received a very similar letter, and my husband got quite upset that they had the information.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to, again, call our hotline before you ever take action and check that out. But there has been a recent circulation of these letters going around about miscalculated payments. And go back to your source of where your mortgage is being held and question them. Go to the authentic source instead of someone else who may be representing something to you that you probably have to pay in order to get their services. And all of those are those red flags that you've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for calling, Katie. Carrie in Balsam Lake, we're turning to you next. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I have a good friend whose ex-husband, she thinks that he's invaded her computer and all her friends' computers because all her friends are having problems. And is that possible?
Well, it certainly is. Yeah. I don't know whether it is in this particular case. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what they're seeing, you know, that makes them suspicious.
The emails are disappearing, and also, you know, some of them are crashing. And he's very computer literate. Mm-hmm. He knows that's his job.
Yeah.
The best thing I can suggest is make sure they have very good, high quality antivirus, anti-spyware loaded. They may want to take a look at doing things like changing passwords, starting with the ones they use to do financial business online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a way to investigate? How can you prove something like that?
Well, it may be a matter for local law enforcement. Balsam Lake may not, but maybe at the county level or, I don't know, Eau Claire may have somebody trained in doing that kind of forensic investigation.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Look into it, and I think you're right too, Sandy. You gotta change those passwords, and sometimes it's I know friends who have just gone to another service and opened a whole different account just to get out of it, problems that they were having. Scott in Madison, we'll get to you in just a second, but a reminder that we're visiting today about safe holiday and vacation shopping with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. Talking consumer protection issues with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. Sandy is administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. So it's great to have them along. And certainly you can join in with a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, and you can post right there. Let's go to Scott in Madison next. Scott, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hey, no problem. Hey, I'm going with the suit of, you know, like internet hacking and phone calls coming in and identity theft on the consumer level. Why we see all this stuff, like with the presidential election coming up, that all these topics are coming up. Identity theft is growing. It goes across state borders. We have very little protection against, you know, in the judicial system against this kind of stuff. You hear every day people are getting, you know, LCD TVs that they bought with somebody else's stolen credit card, and you see on the TV every once in a while, you know, like on them, I mean, on the same level as like the shows like To Catch a Predator, you know, they'll go out and they'll confront these people, and they just laugh and walk into their house and turn on ESPN, and they didn't even pay for that. Why can we not get laws to protect consumers against this? It should be a federal thing. And it just gets frustrating, you know, watching mm-hmm. them. I lost my wallet. Unfortunately, this is my own fault. I had my Social Security card in there. But I went through the steps, you know, I looked stuff up and took the steps that I think I needed to protect myself, and I'm just kind of watching my credit scores and stuff, making sure everything's in line. But when people steal that stuff and use your identity to get stuff that's not theirs, why don't we prosecute that more? Why do they just get away by laughing and turning on their stolen TV and their stolen, you know, they mm-hmm. drive around in their stolen car? And
mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get a response here. Sandy Chalmers, you want to start?
That is a very good point. And from the big picture, this whole idea of cybercrime, you know, it's an international problem. And considerable government resources are expended at the federal and state levels protecting the government cyber infrastructure from attack. And, you know, you've probably read, as I have, about all the attacks on our federal infrastructure that are coming from places like China and mm-hmm. the Middle East. It costs businesses billions of dollars a year. And it costs consumers, too. And as I said earlier, it's the fastest growing kind of fraud, this online internet identity theft scam. What our approach is at the state level is, first of all, to educate people on how they can protect themselves. And there are safeguards you can put into place that makes your chance of being ripped off smaller. And that's a very important part of avoiding identity theft and cybercrime. We do work with our federal partners, the FBI, Federal Trade Commission, which is the nation's consumer protection agency, the U.S. Secret Service, the U.S. Postal Service. And by leveraging state and federal resources, we are better able to get at these big, technologically very advanced criminals. And the specifics of the law at the state level, I'll let Michelle address.
Identity theft is a crime. And so depending upon the amount of money that's stolen or the type of identity theft that's done, it can be a felony, too. So the issue Sandy talked about, it's just difficult sometimes to track, catch, or prove. So, and you know, I hate to say it, sometimes there's a resource issue with local law enforcement as well in tracking this crime. So the partners are all working together. They're trying to break crime rings because that's what this identity theft often is. And in some cases, sometimes the identity thief is a family member. So that's part of the problem with identity theft, of the other family members really wanting to step up and be a witness against another family member and take action and do something about it. But there are laws on the books that does allow for the prosecution of identity thieves, and at what level? And there are laws that are both on the state and federal levels for that. But if I could just add one more thing,
yeah,
it kind
go
of
ahead.
Sidetracks. Just if we can take this opportunity from Scott's statement, and you know, he said his Social Security card was in his wallet, but let's just take this moment to do an education piece of if you don't need it, don't carry it around, because it's so easy to lose your wallet or misplace, especially given the holidays, because the wallet's coming in and out of the pocket a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've left mine behind before. So you're not applying for jobs every day. That's usually when you need your Social Security card. So if you can leave those things at home in a secure place, that's the best thing you can do, one of the steps you can take in prevention.
One of the services we provide with our Office of Privacy Protection is helping victims of identity theft recover their money. And we'll help walk you through the process, you know, how to repair your credit, how to recover stolen money, stolen credit cards. And that can be very helpful for people as well.
Thanks again for calling, Scott. Appreciate your call. I want to give Jim in Lake Mills a chance to join in here. Jim, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I know this is a very serious matter, but I just want to tell you what I do when I get some of these phone calls. Being retired, I don't have a heck of a lot of urgent things that I have to do during the day, so I have time to play around with these people. And basically what I do is I give them all bogus information. And I try to make my name have a little, you know, a subliminal message in it. So I just wanted to tell them that I have a little fun with them, I guess. And I don't know what good it does by any stretch of the imagination, but that's my comment, and I'll take any kind of comment you may have off the air.
You're being creative. That's good. What happens is that these crime rings, again, most originate from overseas, just start calling, and they look for people who will pick up their phones. They look for people who will call back, and they look for people who will press one to you know, talk to a live body. What they do is then sell your phone number to other crime rings who will continue to call you. So what I recommend is if you get a call from Robo Rachel or see that unknown name, unknown number pop up on your caller ID, don't even pick up.
Hmm. There you go. Dave in Eau Claire, we turn to you. Hello, Dave.
Yeah, I work for a company that we recycle recycling products. We've had a young man bringing in some materials lately from a relative's business that went out of business, and in them documents there's names, phone numbers, ages, Social Security numbers, all that stuff like that. And I'm wondering what the repercussions are for this defunct business if this information were to get out. I mean, he brings in lots of documents.
All right.
Yeah, the state does have a data breach law on the books, and there's a notification that needs to happen. Those documents really should be shredded. So if you would, you know, give us a call offline, that'd be good. We could reach out to the business and educate them and help protect a lot of individuals from what's happening. But I just ask that you do that offline. give us a call.
That's why I did not mention the name of my company or the name of his company.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's small businesses. Businesses, you know, need to protect the information that they take in and destroy it in a manner that won't be able to be obtained by others, potential thieves out there. So shredding of documents, destruction of those documents.
Okay. Can I get the number to call, please?
Absolutely. It's 1-800-422-7128.
800-422-7128.
Right. And just ask to speak to someone in our Office of Privacy Protection.
Privacy Protection. Okay, thank you, because I've been trying to get them to do this. And it makes me nervous when I see all these people's names and social security numbers come through.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling. And use that 800 number, 1-800-422-7128. Sandy in Monroe, we are on to you. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. My question is, my sister passed away 2 years ago, in the last 4 months, we've been getting emails from her. How do you, I mean, what do you do?
Okay, so someone has stolen her email address.
They also have her, because she had a picture on there, and it's her picture.
Oh, boy.
Well, and that must be very upsetting for you.
Yes.
I think what I would do, it's obvious that it's been hacked by somebody. I think I would call your service provider or her service provider and let them know what's happened, and they may just shut down that account.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what you'd hope they'd do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling. Good
thank
luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. And we have Teresa in Heartland with a comment or question. Hi, Teresa.
Oh, good morning. I'm on the no-call list, and I have been getting numerous calls from a lot of different companies, but especially this credit card service. This last week, I must have gotten at least 10 calls. I have pressed to take off the list, but I don't get taken off. I keep calling yet. And then this last couple times I called, they called. I asked them, the one first time I told them I had zero amount of credit card debt, which I do, and I says, I don't need to be called by you, and they hung up on me. Then the next time I asked for more information, I says, why are you calling me, and what is the name of your company, and he hung up on me. And then I get called a little while later by somebody else from the same company. And it's just numerous calls. And they don't take me off their list. They keep calling me back. And it's been day after the last 2 days, I've got calls right in a row.
Michelle, you comment?
That's a perfect example, Teresa, of what Sandy was talking about earlier of if, you know.
Yeah, that they ignore it, huh?
They engage, you've engaged in conversation, and now they'll keep calling you back and trying to break you down to give up information that you don't want to be giving up. So,
I don't even have any credit card debt, and I
sure.
told them so, and then they still call me back.
Right, and that's not all they're trying to figure out. I mean, they want your information. They want your credit card number. They're going to want to get some other personally identifiable information from you. We've heard of this. We've heard of this pretty regularly. We need, file a complaint.
How do you get rid of them?
Well, just not answering the phone if you have a caller ID and can see that that's who's there, hanging up on them, not engaging in the conversation, a no thank you. We've heard of lots of people blowing the whistle in their ear,
thing. Do. I start to ask them for their information. They don't give you their number to call back either.
No, absolutely not. But, you can...
Are you aware of that company?
Right. So if you file a complaint with our agency...
Okay, that's what I have to do then.
You indicated the company name to us here, so... Just that's a piece of information we can work with, but this is one of those national, international issues that's happening, and beyond the borders, and other federal agencies are also working on the topic.
Yeah, but when I ask them information, they don't even want to talk to me. They hang up on me.
Yeah.
Of course they do.
They won't give me their number, probably.
No. But if you're
going to try, if I don't have time to talk with you right now, can you give me your 800 number? Would that work?
No.
Did they give you their information?
I wouldn't, because if you respond in any way, your number will be put on a sucker list, basically, that will be sold to other telemarketers. And as Michelle said, just don't engage at all. Hang up. If you're like my husband, you always say no thank you, and then you hang up.
Well, but I've done that, and they still call back.
Yeah,
And they've got a thing where you press a certain number and you can be on their no-call list.
Right.
But
and that's another
day.
And so you press that number to get on their no-call list, supposedly, and you're identified
work.
As a live number that they will sell to another criminal.
Yeah. You're going to be spending all day on the phone, Teresa. Just kidding.
Like almost every day.
Well,
and I don't have a caller ID either, so it doesn't help.
Yeah, you should. That might be a good thing to purchase.
But sometimes when you get caller ID, it doesn't always show up as their caller number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's another reason to be very skeptical of doing business with somebody you don't know over the phone, because they can manipulate your caller ID to appear to be a local business, for example.
Well, I used to be a business phone number many years ago, but I took our name out of the phone book, and still I'm getting calls like I'm a business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're just random digit dialing, I would expect.
Or that, you know, things stay out on the internet for a long time.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Teresa, thank you. And use that 800 number and call up and let's see what we can do. Steve in Trevor, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Steve.
How's it going?
Good.
Excellent topic. As I was on hold, an actual 877 number came over my company truck phone. Just so it's they call all the time. So anyway, now I drive semi, and I'll go to make a pickup somewhere, and they'll request that they need a copy of my driver's license. Now, I'm just wondering, is that legal? Because then they're putting the door, all right, you know, they have my address and all my yards, my date of birth and everything else. Now, are they legally allowed to do that? Can I tell them, no, you can't do that?
Well, I suppose they can ask for it, but are you required to give it to them is the question, probably.
That's yes. That's my question.
You know, Steve, that's something I need to look at a little bit deeper. There are laws on the books that cover when a driver's license can or should be copied. And with this application, it being part of your occupation, I'm not sure if that ties in. I don't know if you're an independent, you know, truck driver, if you're working for another company, because then you might want to talk to your employer if that's the case and ask what the arrangements are. You know, if it's for the shipping purposes, they want to know who picked up the cargo, that kind of thing. But I think more details and taking a look at the statutes in an application, that's just not one you can get into great detail over the airways on.
All right.
So if you'd call our 800 number and leave your information, your phone number and name there, we could have someone, you know, get back to you with that.
That's great. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have a few emails and Facebook questions as well. Facebook comment from Eileen. I received a phone call yesterday from a person who said that Microsoft had received various error messages from my computer, which indicated my computer had a virus, and he would be able to talk me through recovering this from my computer or removing it. A friend received the same call in the last week, so Eileen took the number and didn't do anything. Microsoft's website indicated this is part of a scam. Sandy, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah. Good job not falling for that one. Facebook, eBay, Microsoft, Craigslist are all getting to the point where they have very good FAQs on recent scams. So, you know, that's another really good resource if you have questions about an email or anything, a potential buyer. Check the scam page on that particular website.
And in all honesty, this happened to my Yahoo account. And instead of responding to the email with, you'd normally think you're communicating back with Yahoo, I went to Yahoo's webpage, just as Sandy talked about, and communicated with them through their website to say, hey, I got this. And they sent me a wonderful FAQ on exactly what I needed to do to make sure my email account was secure.
We got an email from Bill in Heartland. We are on the no-call list, but get 3 to 4 calls a day that are identified on caller ID as toll-free call. When answered, there's nothing on the other end. Other calls that are the same come through as Nevada call or South Carolina call or Iowa call and have the same results. We don't answer them anymore, but they are annoying.
Yes, they are annoying. I agree with that completely. And what happens is that these telemarketers, who most of them are, especially if you're on the no-call list and you continue to get telemarketing calls, it's almost guaranteed that it's a scam of some kind. So
Yeah, I mean, just don't be answering the phone. Disregard what's going on. Mm-hmm. If you can, just ignore your caller ID and answer those calls you know are legit.
These calls tend to come in waves. And, for instance, an area code in the state will be targeted by these telemarketers. And that's why it seems to me that I'll get a dozen calls a night for a couple of weeks and then nothing. And that's mm-hmm. why, you know, they're fishing. They're fishing for information.
Igor in Madison, on to you now. Hello.
Hello, hello. I would like to clarify some technical information regarding so-called email spoofing. So, for example, recently I received, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I received a scam email from myself, from my own email address. And I consulted my friend who works for internet service provider, and he told me that basically it's not that my computer is compromised. It's somehow my email name, you know, just the name. Mm-hmm. Somehow leaked into the hands of people who do this kind of thing, okay? And they know it's a valid email address, and they just randomly send emails to all those people. So if you receive one of your callers indicated regardless that she's receiving emails from her dead sister, it's not that her computer was hacked. It means that somehow they just got a list from some place that she was shopping on the internet. Somehow they know this is an active email address. And it's a very simple, you know, you don't have to be a specialist, a computer hacker. It's very simple, actually, the way the email works, to spoof email address. You know, I can put a sender, whoever I want, doesn't matter. And it will go from a different server. It won't go from my internet service provider. It can go from overseas. But just the name will look like it came from your friend. And another problem associated with that, I noticed, is that filters on various computer systems or at work or at home, they'll indicate it as spam because of the content of the keywords, you know. We very well know, you know, what kind of scams those are, and it will start blocking emails. So your friends who receive supposedly emails from you with your email address will not receive emails from you anymore. So, and it is a growing problem, and I suppose your listeners who have complaints from the friends that they're not receiving emails from them, mm-hmm. they probably had the similar problem. Yeah. So someone, you know, hijacked just the name of the email address.
Yeah.
And you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I'll take comments of the air.
All right. Thank you for calling. Sandy Chalmers, you want to comment?
Yeah. I think it's really important if there's any kind of problem like this with your email account to let your ISP know. Because, you know, if they see unusual amounts of activity or something strange going on, they're likely to shut off your email account. And then where are you? So it's a really good idea to keep in touch with your local internet service provider.
Let's go to Shave in Door County next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm calling because I got one yesterday where somebody called, and I only use a cell phone. So they're on my cell phone and asked me my name, or to verify my name. Are you so-and-so? And I said yes. And then they said, are the last four numbers of your Social Security number so-and-so? And they had it right. And I said, who's calling? And they said, we're an information gathering service. And I said, well, I can't give you that information. And they said, well, we already have the information. We just need you to verify it. And I said, I can't give you that information. And they said, we already have it. We just want you to verify it.
Yeah.
I said, well, I can't verify it. And she said, we already have it. And this went, you know, four times. And I said, I can't verify it. And she said, okay, goodbye, and hung up. And the call was listed as restricted on my ID on my cell phone.
Yeah.
And that's one thing. And then the other thing I have is when you're talking about Social Security numbers, this same call went to my mother-in-law, who's in her 80s, same kind of a call. Well, you got a Medicare card. What about that ID number?
Yeah, it's your Social Security number plus a
right
a letter at the end of it.
Right.
Right. With that card, though, they were going to do a reissuance of cards as they and trade them out with different numbers that weren't your social number. So your mother-in-law should check into that and make a contact and see if she can get a new card issued with a different number. So her social security number isn't part of that anymore. They were working on an effort to do that. And, you know, you're right on. Don't be giving out, don't verify information or do anything like that. I'll be honest with you. I'm probably a little snottier right up front because only people I give my cell number to have it. And then they're in my phone and it's programmed. So there's very few private. And if someone's going to say, who is this to me? Well, they should know who they're calling. So I right away go, well, no, who is this? No. So yeah, I'm a little bit more snotty up front. No.
Well, I didn't know. I thought maybe it was a doctor's office or something calling me or, you know, they've got their whole billing department or whatever.
Yeah, these callers will do anything to get that kind of information because it's just like cash. You know, even the last four digits of your social security number can be very valuable to somebody. Things like your date of birth, your mother's maiden name, things like that. So, again, good job of not falling for the scam.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, our guests from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of scams out there. Lots of people out there who would like to separate you from some of your money. And tell you what, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection try to help you keep your money. And certainly if you have questions, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. You can post a comment there. An email from Angeline. We have a small business recently gotten phone calls saying that we ordered a sample website design, and were we ready to sign up for a website? I said, no one from our organization ordered anything, and we weren't interested. This elicited an aggressive response and at least three more follow-up phone calls. Since then, I've gotten several emails with a similar theme. Our sample website design is ready for us to view. Is this a new type of scam?
It sure sounds like the new item that's being shopped around, but it's very common for small businesses to be targets of products that will help improve their business and be tricked by the you've ordered something and we're going to send it. It used to be copier toner and all sorts of other fax supplies. And here you go. We're ready for delivery because they think it'll get lost in your purchasing department or your between your purchasing and your account and billing that they'll just drop it off and no one will know who ordered what. So you didn't order it. Don't pay for it. Don't accept it. If they send it back and just check all your billing and make sure you're not being charged for it. And if you do, follow up with them. And if you need to, file that complaint.
Caller from Tomahawk's really worried about banks encouraging people to do their banking online. She doesn't feel comfortable with that at all, worries that it's going to become mandatory at some point. What do you guys think? Banking online.
Well, there's a lot of state. Obvious. There's a lot at stake. Financially, by doing that kind of business online, bill paying, you know, it's important to use a very complicated password using letters, numbers, symbols, and to change your passwords frequently. I think one of the most common mistakes people use is to have one password and use it for everything, online shopping, banking, email, and that is
that's not a good idea.
No,
not for sure. Dorothy in Presque Isle, on to you. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for talking to me. I told your representative there we were at our cabin up in Presque Isle, and we get this phone call, and he just says, Grandma, this is my Dan, who is our grandson. He just said, if I tell you something, will you promise not to tell my mother? And I said, well, what about Grandpa? I said, he's sitting right next to me. Well, will he promise too? All right. So he gives me this big, long story about how he was in Spain for one of his friend's mother's weddings. She bought tickets for everybody. And on the way home, he's driving because her son was drunk. So he gets involved in a car accident and knocks over a pole. So he said, they gave me an American English-speaking attorney. And he said, he'll take care of everything, but I have to pay $2,000 to replace the pole. And he said, now, Grandma, I have the money in the bank, but it's going to take like 5 to 7 days to get it over here. He said, do you think you and Grandpa could help me out? And I'm going along, and of course, right now I'm thinking, oh, boy, you know, and then all of a sudden it clicked that I've heard this before. So I'm going along with this kid now, and he's going through the whole thing. And, of course, as a result of the accident, he's talking very nasally because now supposedly he broke his nose. So I get this information, and he just said, my lawyer will get on the phone and talk to you if that's okay. So I quick gave the phone to my husband, grabbed the cell phone, went outside, tried to call my daughter, which would be his mother, and she doesn't, well, a bunch of them that have tried. So I finally got through to somebody. I said, do you know where Dan is? Yeah, he should be home sleeping. He's working third shift. Okay, so I run back in the house. In the meantime, the lawyer is talking to Dan, telling him he should go to Western Union. He should take and mail or ship the $2,000 plus some other fee. And he gave him the name and address. This was all in Barcelona, Spain. And he gave us the name of the kid and who it should go to and everything. So I just quick went into the house, told my husband, Dan is home, you know. So then he's dragging this on with this guy. He says, oh, we're way up in the woods in northern Wisconsin. He said, I don't even know where there'd be a Western Union. So he said, okay, I'll give you an hour and a half, and I'll call you back and let you know if you made arrangements. So then he said, I'll go up and talk to Ben now. And my husband said, Ben? He says, that's not our grandson. He says, we have a grandson, Ben, but he's only 7. And he said, I don't think he's in Spain driving a car. So that's right. He says, I got the wrong record in front of me. Okay, so now we're waiting, and, of course, he never calls back. In the meantime, we call the Vilas County Sheriff's Department. We call our phone company. The Vilas County said right away they knew about it, and did we send the money? And that's the only way that anybody would get involved is if we had shipped the money, then the FBI gets involved. So I said, no, I said, it never went that far. I said, then we realized it's a scam. So we wait. 2.5 hours later, we get this phone call. Grandma, this is Dan, and it's the whole thing all over again. And so now I'm really playing along with him, and I said, you poor kid, did you have to have a rescue squad and all this, and how bad are you hurt and everything? And he's answering everything. So I thought, it's not a recording. And so finally when he gets, you know, it's going on, and I'm egging him, and so I said to him, I said, hey, I think, you know, we can probably stop this right now. I said, we're aware that this is a scam. I said, we've called our local sheriff's department. We've called our phone company. And I said, I think you can stop this right now. And then all of a sudden he goes to a different voice. And he said, but Grandma, this is Ben. And he said, they've got me and they're going to put me in a car. And they're going to touch me all over. And he's whining.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that sounds like a pretty wild scenario. Sandy, have you heard this kind of scenario?
Yes, unfortunately we have. And also, equally unfortunately, we have people in this state who have fallen for that scam and have wired money. And the scary thing is, once you wire the money, you're just not going to get it back. It's like sending cash. So this is a really good example of how manipulative criminals can be. They know where people are vulnerable. Most grandparents would do anything to help out a grandchild. You handled it exactly correctly. So I Yeah. Can you think of anything else,
Michelle? No, just Dorothy, thank you for sharing it, because we could not have done it better justice in telling everyone else about the scam. So you handled it perfectly.
Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Quite the story. Well, this has been kind of fun talking on the, in some ways, to talk on the phone with that character. Adam in Sturgeon Bay, hello.
Hi. I'm calling about banks. You can actually go negative in your accounts. And I found out if you have your accounts connected, you can actually go through a lot of money. And I found out after somebody stole my credit card, they told the number because I went to a gas station, and I checked out, and it had no magnetic strip present. So I got the money back, but I found out that they allow me to go like $300-something negative, and they'll keep taking out of the joint accounts that are connected.
Oh, so they'll empty your accounts.
Yeah, if you have one account connected to the other one for overdraft, you'll keep going negative until a certain amount. But you can tell the bank, I don't want to go negative, and I don't want the accounts connected.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you know, somebody else called and had all of their accounts emptied out of their bank for that, in that same situation.
With overdraft issues?
Yeah, with the overdraft thing. So,
if you set up overdraft and connect your accounts, you need to make sure you very clearly understand the terms and how it's going to work with your bank. Each bank, you know, sets how it's going to work. And as Adam indicated, you know, unless you tell your bank you don't want to go negative, or you need to notify me after the one, find out all the rules and exactly how it's going to work.
And we'll continue our discussion after this quick look at the news here on the Ideas Network. In tough economic times, we might find deals more irresistible than ever, but what happens when a bargain turns into a headache or even worse? Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. My guests today are Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy and Michelle with us for the next half hour. Happy to answer your consumer protection questions. Think you might have been the subject of a scam, or maybe you're worried about protecting your identity? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also visit my Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show. And if you click like while you're there, you'll get regular updates on upcoming show topics. So that's a good thing, too. And I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be back with our two guests right after this look at the news. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about safe holiday and vacation shopping, consumer scams, all kinds of them out there. With our two guests, Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen, director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, our guest today. And Steve in Milwaukee has been waiting a while, so let's go right to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi. There's a lot of issues with Social Security numbers, and you've even said today that even just your last four is valuable. And my father has a copy of his Social Security card. It's probably about 60 years old. On the bottom, it says not to be used for ID. And I can't tell you how many times someone has used my last four as like a PIN number or something. And my employer gave me a fuel card about 2 months ago. And he said, your PIN number is your last four. And wouldn't that be a great piece of consumer protection if we could make that illegal? And do you think it could ever happen?
Mm-hmm.
And when did they start doing that, using your Social Security number as an ID? And what was it originally supposed to be used for?
Yeah. Do we know the history of this, Michelle?
I don't know when it started to be used as an identifier, but beyond for your Social Security collection aspect of it. But long ago, I mean, it started to be used. University used it as an identification.
Yeah. Post grades with the social security numbers.
Right. It's a way of tracking your credit history. It's a way of, you know, the Medicare, your health insurance information, you know, getting utility bills, verifying your credit worthiness. So I don't know how far back it goes when it started, but there are individual companies, entities, universities who've now put policies in place that they will not do this. You know, I know legislators have introduced different pieces of legislation to prevent its use, or that you just have to truncate the information and just use the last four as an identifier. But it's good for companies, best practice-wise. I mean, they need it for tax purposes. They need to collect that from their employees. But as far as your employee ID number, it's good if they have policies in place that give you a random number or some other kind of generator in-house than using your Social Security number. So it's something employees can easily talk to their companies about and ask them where they are on this. But it is an overhauling, and it does take time. And individual companies are realizing what's going on and trying to put better practices in place with regards to this. So It's always important to look at your statement when it comes from Social Security every year and be monitoring your credit reports so you can be checking on what might be out there and to make sure you're not a victim of identity theft.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Steve. Scott in Gaillard, Iowa. We go to you now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, I just wanted to share an experience I had. I was selling a puppy over the internet. I advertised on the internet. I had a person contact me to purchase the puppy through an IP relay service, which I assumed was used by, you know, deaf people. So I kind of overlooked some of the flaws that were going on in the situation because I assumed that the person was deaf on the other end of the computer. They would call me. Anyway, the gist of it was they said they were in England. They wanted to purchase this puppy from me, but there was a lot of shipping costs involved. So what they wanted to do was pay for the puppy and have me hold it first. They were going to send me a check. So that was fine, I told them. Well, then they called back and said, well, the shipping company is going to be coming through there. I'll just send you the money for the puppy and for the shipping costs. You can give them the money when they get there. So I thought that was a little odd, but okay. So they sent me the check, and I think I was selling the dog for maybe $300. The check was for $3,300.
Nah.
I was amazed, and I thought, well, maybe it is really expensive to ship overseas. I don't. So I put it in the bank, and I waited to make sure that the funds transferred in, you know, thinking that I was protecting myself. And I called the bank about 3 days later, and they said, yeah, that's fine. You can use that. And so they wanted me. Then it was the shipping company wasn't going to be able to make it, just wire the money to them. So
yeah.
I put it in the system to wire the money to them, and luckily I didn't get them the information to collect the wire transfer, and the bank called me in time and said that check was no good, and I would be responsible for all the funds that were gone from the account. And I ran back over to Western Union and got all the money back out before they could collect it. But that IP relay service, you know, they weren't deaf at all. They were just using it as a go-between so that I couldn't find their computer or they could use different people all the time because I never heard their voice.
Yeah.
And I'll take my comment off the air.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Michelle?
First, it's great that you got your money back and that the wire transfer hadn't gone through. So that's excellent news. But this is another perfect example of what we refer to as the fake check scam. There's many variations of it, and one of it is that someone's going to try and buy something from you that you've advertised, and they'll do exactly what happened in Scott's case. They'll send the money. Oh, hold the product. I'll send you more for shipping. Oh, never mind. I don't want it. Why don't you give me the money back? You've cashed the check that they've sent, but it's not a legitimate check. We see it with different prizes and winnings. We see it with sweepstakes and advancements on you've won different kinds of foreign country transfers. Here we want to get some money into the country. So this is just one of the examples of how, you know, it's even hard for bankers to tell if the check is legitimate or not.
Right.
And waiting that extended period of time, not just the 3 days before it cleared, but don't have people give you more money than you are requesting for something. Get a certified check, you know, but it's even hard to tell, you know, where that is, if it's a legitimate check or not.
There was a case not long ago in the Eau Claire area where somebody had a very elaborate Craigslist scheme. He had fake checks with a well-known corporate logo on them. The checks looked real. And he would look on Craigslist for people selling high-dollar jewelry or fancy sports cars, would write them a check for more than the purchase price and ask them to send money back to him. And when police went through this guy's apartment, they found hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of these fake checks.
Oh, boy. Bernie in Berglund, Michigan, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention a couple of other resources that are available to consumers. Earlier this year, I purchased a pair of shoes online with a website that looked legitimate, but I hadn't done business with them before. When I did not get an acknowledgement from them, because normally when I order online, I get an immediate acknowledgement that, yes, we've got your order, we're processing your order. When I didn't get anything like that, within a day or two, I sent an email and still got no response. So then I went back and looked at my PayPal account, because that's how I had paid for the merchandise, and it showed that the money had been transferred, but ho-ho, it had been transferred to something in Chinese characters, which, of course, I could not read. So I thought, uh-oh. I got online, and I Googled the name of the website from which I had bought the shoes, and sure enough, there were a few complaints out there that were very specific as to what happened. The people did not get their shoes. They got a mouse pad from China. And when they try, and they had to sign for it, that was part of the scam, was that you had to sign for what you received from the mail carrier, which then made it difficult to resolve because you did, in fact, get something. And it was almost impossible to return it so that you could get your money back, or at least that was the story. So I knew to expect a mouse pad. I did eventually get a tracking number, so I knew when the mouse pad was going to arrive, and I was ready for the mail carrier and asked her to wait a minute while I scanned the label on the package because I thought I might need it. But then I went back to both PayPal and to the Postal Service mail fraud unit and filed a complaint. And it took a while with PayPal. I was annoyed because it looked to me like they were actually facilitating this fraud. And I got a note back from them after they had given me the refund that just because it looked like things were being processed as normal didn't mean that they weren't trying to get to the root cause. And sure enough, after all this was resolved, I looked to see if this bogus website was still there. They were not, but when I Googled on their little motto, sure enough, there is another online shoe store with a different name.
Yep. Very common, isn't it, Sandy, that they just change names?
Yes, absolutely. I hope you reported this to PayPal. Were you able to do that?
Oh, yes. Okay, I reported it to PayPal, and I sent them this little note about, hey, don't facilitate these guys. But, yeah, they took care of it. I did get a letter from the Postal Service Mail Fraud Unit, and, of course, you know, there's nothing they can do for you money-wise, but I'd already received the refund from PayPal. But at least, you know, they indicated that they had recorded it, so they had some record of this going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the lesson for consumers in your story is, especially with Christmas coming up and so much shopping being done online, go with well-known, established companies that you trust. If you buy online, using a credit card gives you extra protections over using a debit card. You, under federal law, you can contest or dispute a charge. So that's an option. I'm not sure exactly how PayPal works in that respect.
Michelle, do you know? We don't quite have that information, but it's kind of sad that now this company. Did you actually, Bernie? Did you contact PayPal about the new company?
No, I did not, because I assumed that they were tracking these folks.
Yeah.
Because of the kind of response that they had given me, that hey, we're, you know, just because it looks like we're processing, it doesn't mean that we're not also following up and trying to resolve the problem. Because of course, if I'm getting my refund from PayPal, that's you know.
Yep. There you go. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Trevor in Madison has a comment or story for us. Hi, Trevor.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I had responded to one of those, you know, pre-screened credit card offers from a well-known national bank, because I wanted to transfer a higher balance credit card to a lower balance. And so I opened a credit card account with them just to transfer the balance and then proceeded to pay it down and didn't use the, you know, I kept the credit card in my desk. I never used it because I only wanted to pay it down, and I paid it off. And, you know, then several months later, they called me with charges that had been used on the account in Australia. Someone bought, you know, merchandise or something. And so I was wondering, you know, how do you, and I hadn't closed the account because I read that you shouldn't close accounts, for your credit score. So how do you protect yourself if I don't believe that there was any way that someone could have gotten the number from me if I didn't use it, only had opened it for the balance transfer.
Yeah.
If they got a hold of a statement that was mailed to you somehow, if you had discarded that and hadn't shred it, that could be a potential way that they got your number. Sometimes I may try random generation sort of thing. If they, you know, if on the credit card company end, but I'll say highly doubtful,
right.
But still possible. You know, if you were doing any kind of transfer to pay it off electronically and had any kind of keylogger on your computer, I mean, there are different ways where that could have been obtained. So making sure that you're checking your statement and responding if the credit card company calls you with that. I mean, credit card companies are really monitoring for fraudulent activities, but it's also our responsibility as consumers to monitor our statements for that as well, and then taking action on it as soon as you see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You should contact your credit card company immediately if you haven't done that already, and they'll issue you a new card with a new account number. And then it's probably a good idea to contact your bank, too, and let them know that this has happened. And they may recommend closing your accounts and reopening them, giving you a new ATM debit card with a new PIN. You know, and that's just extra protection just in case.
Yeah, that's good advice. And it was something that hadn't been on my radar, because if you think, oh, this account is zero, and, you know, I don't use it, I don't need to think about it, but... But
yep.
there's still happen.
Yeah, there's great value in regularly checking your credit reports to look for credit card accounts that are there that you didn't open. You know, that does happen. And that debt, you know, sticks with you and counts against your credit score for a long, long time.
Yeah. And if you do have a credit card that is a zero balance, and you're not using it anymore, you transfer the balance off to pay it off, and you're never going to use this card again. There, as far as I recall in research stuff, there isn't anything wrong with closing that account. I mean, you're closing it because you don't want it. Now, as far as your credit report goes, you don't have this potential extended credit limit that you could abuse, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it hurts your score. It may potentially help your score.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Got it. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. An email from Nancy who says, I'm scrupulous about shredding personal information in hard copy format, including envelopes, solicitation letters, fundraisers and marketing. I even tear off the address sections of magazines and catalogs and shred them. I was in a discussion with my sister-in-law about this, and she said she doesn't bother with that because it's a waste of time. I replied that a thief could use any little piece of information for ID fraud. Her response is, well, they have it already. Am I wasting time, effort, and electricity on this? Does it matter if an envelope, solicitation letter, or magazine goes into recycling without removing your personal identifying information?
Well, I'd say I shred everything, too. We rip out those centers of magazines if they're pre-filled because I don't want anyone to get a hold of it and do anything. There are more advanced technology ways to obtain your information, but this is one way that you can combat the simplistic thief, the one who's going to dumpster dive.
Right, and we've talked a lot about the cybercrime and how technologically advanced these criminals can be. The most common way criminals get a hold of your personal information is by either stealing your wallet or going through your trash.
Listener called to say that, according to a recent New York Times article, it's the length of the password, not so much the complexity, that will keep you safe. 11 characters or more is much safer than passwords with less than 10. It takes hackers many more years to crack a longer password.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
I've read the articles, as I'm sure you have, saying the most commonly used password is the word password. And you do have to be a little more sophisticated than that if you're going to, you know, stave off these thieves.
Ed in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Ed.
I'd just like to mention that my son-in-law, against my recommendations, got a job with a large major national bank, and the only department that was hiring was credit and collections. Essentially, what that large major bank does is they contract out with someone from the internet, and just with those last four numbers, like of your Social Security number, if they know your age and where you live, they reconstruct, you know, the other five numbers real simple. Medicare sends me information, and they've sent me unsealed letters with my Social Security last four digits on it. I called up Medicare itself and debated with a supervisor that the envelope was unsealed. She was on the phone with me for a half hour debating to me that it's no problem to use the last four numbers of the Social Security number. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention that.
Well,
as best you can keep your information secure, that's what we advise people do. But yeah, that last four digits is out there and used commonly. So trying to not connect it to other pieces because, you know, if there's information gatherers out there, they can reconstruct things. That is true.
Hmm. Thank you. And Steve in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Larry. I am the power of attorney for my mother. She lives in an assisted living facility in Milwaukee, and I got a letter, and it said, we are requiring that you give us the checking account information for your mother so we could directly take the funds for her rent every month out of her account. Well, I don't really want to give them that information. We pay them every month. There's never been a problem. So the question is, can they make us give them this information to automatically take the money?
Huh. Why would they...
There are different companies who will only accept payment in certain ways, and so it's up to you if you want to do business in that fashion or not. I'm not aware of anything at this point that prohibits a company from just, you know, clarifying how they want to do business. I mean, there are stores who refuse to take credit cards. They'll only take cash. There are stores who won't take personal checks. They'll only take credit or cash. And this is the way that they want to secure and operate their company. So it's up to you if you want to do business that way. Mm. I mean, you can have that conversation and maybe make other arrangements individually, but you might be at their mercy if you want to do business with them.
Yeah.
That strikes me as really odd. I've rented when I was a student. Never did I ever hear a requirement to take money directly out of your checking account.
Yeah, that's Yeah, you wonder if there. I wonder if there's another way to set it. You might talk with them about another way to set it up. At least if it, maybe if you run it through if you run it through a company,
PayPal.
Yeah. You run it through a pay company. Yeah, a company like PayPal, possibly. But even that.
Or I hate to say it, the other option is to open up a checking account just for that purpose, put in the appropriate amount of funds, and pay it on a regular basis, the same as you would rent. So it's really limited as to what their access is.
Yeah, well, that's another way to do it. Good luck, Steve. Thank you for calling. And Sandy and Michelle, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. We'll have to do this again. The time flew.
Thanks, Larry. It was fun. Thank you. It was a good time.
Sandy Chalmers, Administrator, and Michelle Wrighton, Director in the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They're in the Bureau of Consumer Protection. They'll be back. We'll do this again with them. Tomorrow, oh my goodness, it's Friday already, and that means Garden Talk. Jeff Epping from Olbrich Botanical Gardens joins us. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.